I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to Saving Lives in Slow Motion. Today, I'll be talking about medical errors. Now, it's a pretty trenchant topic, this, because a lot of people will have been affected by it. And as a doctor who's also been a patient and had relatives in hospital, I can see how medical errors are almost part and parcel of medical practice. It's very, very difficult to eliminate medical error altogether. But it is such an important thing to try to eliminate that I thought it was worth spending 10 minutes just talking about the types of medical error, why they happen, what we can all do to reduce the possibility of them as practitioners and as patients, and also to go through some common examples of medical errors. So where I'd like to start with this is an anecdote that a good old friend of mine told me, who I've actually known since my first ever job in medicine, and he shall remain nameless. But he remembers when he was a medical student that there was a professorial ward round, and the ward was really busy, and the professor that my friend was shadowing decided to help the nurses out because there was lots of sickness on the ward in terms of staff illness, and the nurses were short, so he thought he would help out by doing the drug round. So if you've ever been an inpatient in hospital, you'll know that the nursing team come around at set times during the day to administer medication. And back in those days, there used to be these little sort of cardboard trays where all the medication was laid out for each patient on a drug trolley that used to sort of go round the ward. And the professor administered the medication to all the patients on the ward. And then when he got to the end of the round, there was one set of medication left over. So he'd given every single patient the other patient's drugs, the wrong drugs, effectively. And thankfully, nothing happened. No one came to harm. But that's a really good example of where good intentions end up inadvertently leading to a medical error, in this case, a prescribing error, or in fact, not prescribing error, because the prescription presumably was correct. It's just it was more of a drug administration error. So we can come on to look at how we can minimize those kinds of errors. But the shocking thing is that in terms of the actual cause of death in the United States of America, when you look at all of the reasons like stroke or Alzheimer's disease or respiratory illness, actually medical errors is the third commonest cause nowadays, which to me is staggering. So it's a really big issue. So if we just think about the actual categories of medical errors, one of the biggest ones, and one that I've seen time and time again discussed when we're trying to learn from medical errors, is problems with communication. Now, that in itself is a huge area. Communication is something that we all do all the time. There's lots of modes of communication, predominantly in medicine. The difficulty is everything happens in such a rush sometimes that, you know, proper communication is really important, and you know, especially in an emergency setting, but also in the setting of things that are routine. So one of the cases that really sticks in my mind in recent years is the case of Elaine Bromley, who was married to Martin Bromley, an airline pilot, and she went in for a routine sinus operation in 2007. And shortly into the procedure, it was obvious that she couldn't hold her airway and her oxygen levels were dipping. And very sadly, eventually she ended up in intensive care and passed away within the next 12, 13 days. Now, initially, the hospital said, "We're really sorry, these things happen." And it wasn't really until her husband Martin approached the hospital and asked them to investigate what had happened that they found that in the theatre, which were full of doctors and nurses, when it became apparent that there was something wrong, although there were emergency airway kits available and all the equipment was to hand, the procedure that should have potentially been performed to actually allow Elaine to oxygenate wasn't. And afterwards, when theatre staff were interviewed, particularly the nurses, were very surprised that this never happened. And there's something in there about having the courage to speak up, especially when you've got someone in the room who you think knows more than you. And I've had this scenario myself where you know, a junior doctor or a medical student will often point something out and I'll think, oh yeah, thanks for pointing that out. One of the things which really stays with me from that is Martin Bromley, Elaine's husband, actually set up something called the Clinical Human Factors Group, along with a bunch of medics, to make patient safety paramount to stop these things from happening again. So he's actually an airline pilot by trade. And apart from making sure communication is clear, I mean, we all hear of stories, don't we, where someone goes in for an operation and they've had the wrong leg operated on, or someone takes a verbal instruction and actually they get the dose of something wrong because they heard, I don't know, 5 instead of 9 or something like that. But one of the quotes that I love from Martin Bromley is this, and what he says is, "We are all wrong, no matter how good we are." And I think if you can hold that in your mind as someone who's a practitioner, you know, because I tend to find errors happen when you're rushing or when you're being distracted, or someone's asking you to do more than one thing at once. And that's when communication can lapse because people aren't concentrating or they're trying to do too many things at once. And so you'll be able to read a bit more about Elaine's case in the show notes, but how do we make communication better? Well, it's a really good point. I mean, one of the things that seems to help in procedures particularly are checklists, and surgical checklists were introduced a few years ago, and there's no doubt that they've improved safety. And that way, the whole team has to have input and two-way communication in terms of a briefing that everyone is involved in. So, you know, checklists, I think, are great. And also, having the courage to ask if you're not sure, you know, rather than this kind of old school culture of, you know, just getting on with it. If you're not sure, it's always best to double check things. And it goes very much for patients as well. So one of the things I tend to do, and a lot of my patients do, is they summarize at the end of a consultation just to make sure that we're both on the same page. Certainly another thing that can help with communication is, of course, it doesn't always have to be spoken. If a practitioner is giving information to a patient, I often recommend sending links or writing things down as well, just for reinforcement and clarity. So I've spent quite a chunk of that on communication because actually it feeds in to almost all the other areas of medical error, which include human factors, you know, things like a lack of knowledge, for example, which is unfortunate and reflects poor training. But again, that links into communication. You know, why is a particular person lacking knowledge? Is it because there are issues in the team around communication and learning? Poor documentation is also another area where there's scope for error. So inadequately labelling drugs, for example, or writing down medical notes that are just not accurate enough or detailed enough, or in some cases there are no notes at all. And what that means is, it just, again, it's in a way it's a form of communication. It makes things very difficult for other team members when they're looking in the notes to find out what's going on with a patient. Just on a side note, I think this has become much more difficult in hospital medicine because of the way that shifts work, and often you've got one team member for a, you know, who's on for 12 hours, and then there's handover, and they hand all the patients over to another team member for 12 hours and then another. And so there's a bit of a loss of continuity. And of course, in the olden days where people used to work, you know, 56 hours or something over a weekend was completely inhuman. But the only advantage of that was is that you knew what was happening to the patients over that you know, the course of those days. So I don't know what the answer to that is, but handover is really key. And again, that comes back to good communication. So other factors include things like a lack of staffing in terms of making sure that there are adequate numbers of staff available. Now, that's difficult at the moment in the NHS in certain sectors because of recruitment and because of burnout. And we know in any job, if you are absolutely at your limit or there's a lack of workforce, effectively meaning that everyone is stretched to the max, you're much more likely to make a mistake. So that's one which relies on the system working properly. Then there are technical failures. Now, these are things where medical devices fail or equipment fails, and occasionally you'll see that there are big cases, for example, breast implants. So many of you would have heard of PIP breast implants and the harm that came to many patients that had them implanted after breast cancer surgery. And a lot of these things don't come to light until after they've happened, because obviously at the time the implants were deemed safe, and clearly they weren't. And you can have a look at that case again in some links in the show notes. Just while we're talking about harm, I mean, of course, that's the whole point about reducing medical error, because medical errors lead to harm, you know, potentially. Now, most of the time, you know, it can be something very minor and the harm is minimal. But, you know, as a doctor, your first and foremost duty is first do no harm. It's one of the tenets of medicine. And I think this is one of the reasons why we really need to take medical errors very seriously, not just prescribing drugs or procedures, but just the whole thing in general. What can we all do to make things safer? Well, I think as a patient, I would say asking for clarity and explanations until you're satisfied that you understand clearly what's going on. I've recently been a concerned relative, you know, in a hospital, and even being medical, actually, there were times where I thought, hang on, I'm not really sure what's going on here, can you just say that again? So no one's going to mind if you ask that. The second thing is a bit more formal, a version of what I've just said, which is about consent. And consent is when you as a patient agree for a procedure or something to go ahead. It can be as simple as a blood test, or it can be a knee replacement or whatever. But again, when you sign forms, make sure that you read everything on there and do ask if there's any question about anything. Obviously, things like blood tests are just verbal consent. You know, no one's going to get you to sign a form for that necessarily. And from the point of view of clinical teams, you know, doctors, nurses, physiotherapists, pharmacists. What do we do when things go wrong? Well, firstly, we feel terrible because no one wants anything to go wrong. And as someone who looks at complaints quite a lot, I have to say more than most of them are to do with communication. I guess the next group is to do with when something didn't happen quickly enough, you know, a delay in something, whether that's a referral or getting something sorted out quickly enough. Those things are really challenging, particularly in the current climate that we're in. And I think, you know, what we do certainly at our end is we look closely at the actual event, and then we learn from it. So they used to be called significant events or critical events. And, you know, if there was a near miss, you know, say someone had sent the wrong prescription to the wrong patient, for example, why we look at a sort of a root cause analysis. You know, why did that happen? You know, was it because someone was rushing? Was it because there were two patients with very similar names, you know, and then that gets fed back into improving that process or procedures. So policies and procedures in organisations are often the backbone to prevent medical errors. If you're passionate about it, I would suggest that you get involved locally, either with your patient group at your GP surgery, or at your local hospital. And there are patient safety organisations. Again, I will post links to this in the show notes if it's of interest to you, because one of the ways we learn is via feedback. And, you know, I often get asked by friends or family or people that I know about things that have gone wrong with their medical care elsewhere, nothing to do with, you know, myself treating them because I'm not their doctor. And they often ask me what I would do. And what I say is, look, you've got to let them know. Just why don't you just write them a polite letter and put it in writing and just say, look, you know, this happened on XYZ date. And I'm just letting you know so that you can let me know why it happened and so that it doesn't happen again. And genuinely, I think medical organisations like to hear those things, because that's the only way that we can improve. What isn't helpful is just, you know, random rantings and pylons on social media just saying how bad a particular service is without anything specific or focused. And it's always best, I think, to try and make headway with the organisation privately before resorting to things like that, because, you know, it does nothing but you know, reduce already flagging morale amongst staff who are doing their best. So, you know, no one wants medical errors, and no one does them on purpose. Okay, so that was a quick tour of medical errors. As I said, there are links in the show notes. I think particularly Elaine Bromley's case is really powerful for me. In terms of learning, in terms of culture, and in terms of what we're trying to do as medics. Thank you so much for your feedback so far. Do let me know if there are any topics that you want to hear about. I'm on Instagram, I'm on Twitter, and on LinkedIn. And thank you again for listening. I do hope to be with you again soon. And in the meantime, do stay well. Take care.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.